Bibles this morning and open them to the book of Amos. And the topic of our study together this morning is Amos, the country preacher. And we're going to begin our study from the book of Amos as we travel through the minor prophets of the Old Testament. We looked at our charts this morning in our Bible study and kind of looked at the kings that were reigning during this span of time. And Amos is one of the prophets that was chosen by Jehovah God to cry out against the wickedness that was running untouched, unrepentant, in the lives of not only Israel, but many of the other countries, even including Judah. And Amos, of course, is the preacher that was asked to speak against these evils. And the reason that I refer to Amos as the country preacher is because that is exactly what he was. He was an unusual pick for Jehovah God. History tells us that he lived about 10 miles south of the city of Jerusalem in a place called Tekoa. And I understand that it was on a mountainous terrain, and it was very difficult to work out a living in those areas. And it also teaches us that he was a raiser of sheep, made his living herding the sheep and gathering the fruit called sycamore fruit. The more I read about that particular fruit, it must have been something like what we know today as a fig. So, Amos made his living looking and raising sheep, and when the season was right, would make his journey to an area where they raised a great deal of this particular fruit and gathered this fruit. But on an unusual occasion, Jehovah God speaks to this man, explains to him that he wants him, Amos, to go and deliver God's word to the people. Now, notice if you will that as you begin looking at the book of Amos, one of the quickest ways is to kind of divide out the book. If you've got a pen and pencil with you and a little space at the top of the book of Amos, you can very easily do that. For example, as we begin our study in the book of Amos, we're going to notice that the first chapter of the book of Amos and into the first verse or two of chapter 2, Amos is going to cry out against the countries round about Israel and Judah. And then as we get into chapters 3, 4, and 5, he's really going to focus on his major assignment. That is the country of Israel. Those 10 tribes that followed Jeroboam. And then, of course, in chapters 7 through 9, we're going to read about some 5 visions that God allows Amos to see that he could preach about to these people. And then tonight, in chapters 9, we're going to look at Amos' prophecy about the hope of the new kingdom that he mentions in chapter 9. Now notice, if you will, as you begin looking at the first verse of Amos chapter 1, it says the words of Amos, who was among the herdmen of Tekoa, which he saw concerning Israel in the days of Uzzah, king of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, 2 years before the earthquake. Now, what that verse allows us to do is really focus on the time span as we talked about in our Bible class this morning. The two kings that were reigning, both in Israel and in Judah, Jeroboam, too, was reigning in Israel, and Uzziah was the king over Judah. And of course, he was from Tekoa, and he prophesied about 2 years before a earthquake that happened that history talks about. So that really dates Amos as a preacher, and it dates the time span of the book itself. For example, we find then Amos preaching to an apostate group of people, Israel, about 760 years before the birth of the sinless Son of God himself. Now notice also what he says in verse 2. He says in verse 2 of Amos chapter 1, "The Lord will roar from Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem." You see, I think what Jehovah God is trying to tell us in verse 2 of the book of Amos is that this is a message coming from God. It's going to come from the city of Jerusalem. Mind you, that Amos the prophet is about 10 miles south of Jerusalem. He's from the tribe of Judah, and he's going to cry out against the children of Israel. He's going to talk about the judgment that is to come. But we also learn in chapter 1 that this judgment that's going to come is not going to be just Israel. He first of all mentioned some six countries that are living round about Israel and Judah. For example, notice if you will, in verse 3, he mentions the place called Damascus. And he says, "I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they have threshed Gilead with the threshing instruments of iron." Now, remember if you will, Gilead is the location. It's the place where the half-tribe of Manasseh located when Joshua took the people into the land of Canaan, the land flowing with milk and honey. Notice also that we're talking about an area where David was very instrumental in forming locations and alliances with people like the king of Tyre. So you're looking at three locations that are not associated with God's descendants at all. You're talking about Damascus or Syria. You're talking about Gaza. You're talking about countries that have no affiliation whatsoever with the children of Israel or Judah. But then he mentions Edom. Notice, if you will, we've already talked about Edom. Remember the little prophet Obadiah was chosen to go to Edom and cry out against the sins of Edom? Edom was guilty of gloating when hard times came upon Judah. Edom was guilty of standing in the crossroads and permitting people from fleeing from the city of Jerusalem when people would come into the city. Edom, of course, was a descendant or descendants of Esau. And then notice, if you will, mentions Ammon and Moab in verse 1 of chapter 2. Now these two cities, Ammon is the location that David fought against. Remember, these people were descendants of Lot. David went to battle against the Ammonites, and it was in this location that he sent Uriah to the front of the line to have him murdered so that he could take his wife Bathsheba. And then as we begin chapter 2, verse 1, it talks about Moab. So both Ammon and Moab were descendants of Lot. Edom was a descendant of Esau. So we have three countries that's mentioned that God is going to judge, that he's going to meet punishment upon, that have no connection with his descendants at all. But then he mentions three that are relatively connected to Israel and Judah. Then notice, if you will, he mentions in verse 4, very quickly, the tribe of Judah. Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Judah and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof. Listen what he says. Because they have despised the law of the Lord and have kept not his commandments, their lies caused them to err after the which their fathers have walked. But I will send a fire upon Judah, and it shall devour the palaces of Jerusalem. Notice, if you will, that Jehovah God is telling Amos to Amos, I want you to share this information with Judah, your kinspeople, the location where you live. They are guilty of religious apostasy. They're guilty of living a moral life that is not conducive with God's own ways. The worship that they were involved in is not the type of worship that Jehovah God is pleased with. Now remember, if you will, these are the people, the tribe of Judah, that followed Rehoboam. They were people that, for all practical purposes, up to the times of Jehoshaphat, were faithful to the Word of God. But now we see the impact. We see the effect that Ahab and Jezebel had had when they allowed their daughter to marry into the family of Judah, Jehoshaphat's family. And because of that, it had corrupted their worship. It had corrupted their morals. It had corrupted the conduct of the people that were living in that location that professed to be worshipers of God. Now notice, if you will, they begin on Israel, or Amos does, in verse 6. We're now getting to the very heart, to the very meat, the very purpose of Amos himself. How do you think old Amos must have felt? Here he was, an old country preacher, raised in the mountains outside the city of Jerusalem, a sheep herder and a gatherer of sycamore fruit. The responsibility falls upon him to cry out against the sins of Israel. Oh no, this is not the first time, remember, if you will. Remember the man of God out of Judah had to go and look old Jeroboam right straight in the face and cry out against the wickedness of his day. Now, many years later, you have another prophet by the name of Amos from Judah having to go to Israel and cry out against the priests, the teachers, the religious people, the prophets of Israel. Look what he says in verse 6 of chapter 2. Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Israel, and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they have sold the righteous for silver, and the poor for a pair of shoes, that pant after the dust of the earth on the head of the poor, and turn aside the way of the meek, and a man and his father will go in unto the same maid to profane my holy name. And they lay themselves down upon clothes laid to pledge by every altar. They drink the wine of the condemned in the house of their God. You see what Amos is saying to these people? You understand the message that he's talking about? You're talking about God's people. You're talking about 10 tribes of the children of Israel that were living very immoral lives. that were conducting their affairs in such a way that they were running roughshod over the poor. But not only the poor in general, the poor among themselves. You say, it seems to me that during this span of time, we talked about that this morning, both Judah and Israel were doing quite well financially. Both kingdoms were growing. Both kingdoms were expanding. And it seems to be the case that while these Israelite people were doing very well financially, the rich among them were getting richer. But they were many times obtaining those riches off of the backs of the poor. Many years ago, I ran a wholesale route down in the Delta of Mississippi. And they still had the old stores out in the country, the old plantation stores. And I never will forget, I can still see this old store building in my mind. It was an old-timey country store. You walk in the front of that store, had about 10 or 12 foot walls and ladders. You had to go up the ladder to get the goods off the top of the shelves. And there was an old pot-bellied stove that was in the back of that building. And in the wintertime, they would all sit around the old pot-bellied stove, and there was a black gentleman that always sat around that pot-bellied stove, and he was sitting in the back of that old building. Never will forget him saying this on one occasion. He said, "You know, I can't think of anything worse than slavery unless it is sharecropping." Now remember, if you will, I had two granddaddies that made their living sharecropping, and I can remember some conversations about what this old gentleman was talking about. You see, they had to buy everything from the country store. And the plantation owner owned the country store, and the country store dictated how much they were to charge for your clothes and your shoes and your food, and many times when they gathered their crop, oh, they were just $50 or $75 short of paying off their bills, so they had to stay another year and make another crop. It seems to be the case that this is what was taking place during Israel's time. There was people among them that were Israelite by blood. And if you remember when we studied from the book of Deuteronomy and from the book of Leviticus, there was information there given by Jehovah God to Moses to tell those people how to treat the poor among them. And it seems to be the case, write this down, we don't have time to read it. Deuteronomy chapter 24, 10 through 18. Deuteronomy 24, 10 through 18, as well as Leviticus chapter 25. Leviticus chapter 25, verses 39 through 46. There was instructions there for the poor and how to treat the poor. For example, if we were having hard times and could not make a living for my family, I could sell myself to old Jerry, who was doing much better down there, and Jerry could hire me as a helper, and it would be the equivalent of sharecropping. But there was instructions as to how people were to be treated. You gave those people an opportunity to buy themselves free, set themselves free. So there was instructions as to how to treat the poor, how to work the poor, how to pay the poor, and notice what was happening. You sold the righteous for silver. Who was the righteous? Godly people that were going through difficult times financially. And the poor for a pair of silk shoes. You see, they were making their money off the backs of the poor. And Amaziah cries out against them. Then he goes on in verses 9 and following of chapter 2, and he reminds these people, "Don't you remember what I've done for you? I led your people out of Egyptian bondage. I used old Moses and took them down to Sinai and stayed a year there with them. traveled through the wilderness with you, gave my laws, my judgments, my statutes, took care of you by providing food and shelter. And old Joshua took you into the land of Canaan. I gave you judges to judge righteously. And look at you. You gave the Nazarites wine to drink and commanded the prophet, saying, prophesy not. Jeremiah will talk about this very later on, several hundred years later. Jeremiah would say, the people were saying, prophesy not unto me hard things, but speak unto me smooth things. You know, it's somewhat sad to say, but we're kind of a lot like that today, are we not? This book we call the Bible, a Bible that is about God, sin, and redemption, talks about some very positive things, but it also talks about some very negative things. And we have to declare the whole counsel of God. Paul says, I declared the whole counsel of God. Now, he begins in chapter 3. And he makes the point in verse 3. Can two walk together except they be agreed? What Jehovah God is saying is that old Amos and I, we got it together. And I trust Amos. I picked Amos because I knew he was a hard man. I knew he was a rugged man. I knew he was raised in those mountains, and he will not shy away from telling you what I want you to hear. He says in verse 8, the lion hath roared. Who will not fear? The Lord God has spoken. Who can but prophesy? You see what he's saying here? He's saying, look, I'm trying to salvage a remnant. In verse 12, he says, thus saith the Lord, as the shepherd taketh out of the mouth of the lion two legs, a piece of an ear, so shall the children of Israel be taken out of that dwelling Samaria in the corner of a bed and in Damascus in a cage. You see what he's saying? You're going to be like that lion, that lamb that was caught by the lion. Assyria is going to come in, and they're going to rip you out of your country. They're going to take you out of your homeland. And you're going to be like the carcass of that lamb that was caught. And the old prophet just jerked out a piece of this and a piece of that. He says, I'm going to smite the altars of Bethel. And the horns of the altar shall be cut off and fall to the ground. I'll smite the winter house and the summer house, and the houses of ivory shall perish, and the great houses shall have an end, saith the Lord. He even gets on the wives in verse 4, beginning in verse 1. He talks about the kind of Bashan. He's talking about the wives of these rich men in Israel. They're not any better than the men. Oh, they have their fine houses and their nice furniture, and all the clothes that money can buy. And they too are benefiting from the backs of the poor and the downtrodden that they're mistreated. And he's telling them, you have crushed the needy because you want a little bit more expensive wine to drink and a better container to put your drink in. I wonder sometimes if we lose sight and lose focus of our spiritual relationship with God when what we're more concerned about is how we look, what we have, and the type of facilities that we worship in and what's being said in the with the group when they come together to worship Jehovah God. He says, tell you what I'm going to do, ladies. I'm going to take fish hooks and jerk you out of your fancy houses. You're not going to worry about the clothes in your closet, the shoes on your feet, automobiles you drive, because I'm going to take the fish hooks. And I'm going to allow the Assyrian king to come in. And you're not going to be living in those houses. You're going to wound up being prostitutes. You're going to have to prostitute yourself to even make a living. And your sons and your daughters are going to perish. And your husbands will see all of this take place. Notice what he says in verse 12 of chapter 4. Therefore thus will I do unto thee, O Israel, and because I will do this unto thee, prepare to meet thy God, O Israel. You see, it seems to be the case that they really didn't fear God. Now I can imagine how they must have felt when old Amos was talking to these six countries round about Israel and Judah. Boy, can't you hear him? Preach it, brother. Preach it, brother. But I know those Edomites, they are wicked people. And I know them Ammonites, they are bad folks. Put it on them, preacher. They need to hear it. You know, I've noticed over the years that we have a tendency to have certain things that we enjoy listening to. And there's never any complaints. For example, we're preaching on the church and baptism and the Lord's Supper. Because you see, we're all in agreement. Yes, preacher, preach it on. They ought to know this. But then when it comes down to these basic, fundamental principles of life, stop and think about this. Here's Israel and here's Judah. And you know what they're doing? They're worshiping and offering their sacrifices every time they're commanded to offer. They're faithful in doing the sacrifices and the worship at the time Jehovah God said, do it. Now we're going to worship Baal just a little bit. We're going to bow down to the calves. We're going to abuse the poor among us, and we're going to weigh the scales a little heavy when we're selling. We're going to lighten up on it when we're buying. But now we're doing our sacrifices, God. We're making our offerings, God. But you see, the problem was, it was the moral conduct of the people. They were unlike their father David, who was a man after their God's own heart. Look in chapter 5, verse 10. Here's the attitude they had. They hate him, listen to this, they hate him that rebuketh in the gate, and they abhor him that speaketh uprightly. Now we're going to notice this a few chapters later. When the old priest calls down Amos the prophet, and he said, now Amos, I got a suggestion for you. We are the high and the mighty. Don't you see these nice homes that we have and these chariots and horses that we're driving? Don't you see the clothes these women are wearing and the jewels around their neck and the rings on their fingers? Don't you notice the food that we're eating? And look at you. An old pitiful sheep herder from Tacoma with your inexpensive suit and your lack of education. What you really need to do, you need to go back down to Judah and you need to preach to Judah. You see, they hate the person that was standing at the gate and wanting to teach the truth, and they wouldn't permit it. Look at verse 14. Seek good and not evil, that you may live, and so the Lord, the God of hosts, shall be with you as you have spoken. Hate the evil, love the good, establish judgment in the gate. It may be that the Lord of hosts will be gracious unto the remnant of Judah. See what he's saying? He's saying, now look, you need to listen to old Amos, because it may be that God will change his mind. But if you don't, here's what's going to happen. you're going to be like the man that was away from his house and he ran into a lion. And he ran from the lion and said, "Whew, I'm free of the lion." And he looks up and here comes a bear. And he runs from the bear. And he goes into the door of his house and he leans against the wall and he says, "Honey, you just don't know what I've been through. I ran from the lion. And I ran from the bear, and I'm now safe. I'm at home." And he leans up against the wall, and a serpent bites him and kills him. So that's what's going to happen to you. Look what he says in verse 21. "I hate, I despise your feast days. I will not smell in your solemn assembly, though you offer me burnt offerings and your meat offerings, I will not accept. Neither will I regard the peace offerings of your fat beasts. Take thou away from me the noise of thy songs. I will not hear the music of thy vowels. But let judgment run down as water, righteousness as a mighty stream. Have you offered unto me sacrifice and offerings in the wilderness 40 days, O house of Israel? But you have borne the tabernacle of Moloch." You see what Jehovah God is saying through Amos the prophet? You can make all the sacrifices you want to at the right time, exactly the way I say they need to be. I hate it. You can sing songs of praise to me and I will stop up my ears. I want you to be like a clear stream coming off of one of these mountains. And I want it to be clear and pure so that you're not afraid to drink of that water. And look at you. Look at you, he said. You're bowing down to Moab. Chapter 6, he says in verse 1, "Woe unto you that are at ease in Zion and trust in the mountain of Samaria, that lay upon beds of ivory, stretch yourselves on couches, and eat the lambs out of the flock, calves out of the midst of the stall. Chant to the sound of the viol, invent to themselves instruments of music like David, that drink wine and bowls, and anoint themselves with the chief ornaments, but they are not grieved at the afflictions of Jerusalem." Notice what it says in chapter 8. It really tells the tale. "When will the new moon be dawned, that we may sell corn, and the Sabbath, that we may set forth wheat, making the even small shepherds great, satisfying the balances thereof, that we may buy the poor for silver, and the needy for a pair of shoes, and sell the refuse of wheat." Now let's put all that together. What's going on? Are they making their sacrifices? Yes, God, we are. Are we singing praise to your name? Yes, God, we are. Are we doing it at the right time? Yes, God, we sure are. We're saying, "When will the new moon be?" We want to be there. But here's what they're also saying. Need to mark the calendar down, make the sacrifice, and I want a jar in that building as quick as I can. Get that animal burnt up just as quick as I can. Because I got things to do when I get home. I got places to go when I leave here. I got to buy me some poor people. I got to buy some silver from the poor, the needy from a pair of shoes, and I'm going to sell the refuse of wheat. In other words, I got to make me some money. Let's get this worship business over with as quick as possible, where we can go and make our living, unless, are we going to do it like I said, Lord? We're going to be there, like you said, at the right time. You see where we're going, folks? Yes, we're here on the first day. Yes, we're praying. Yes, we're preaching. Yes, we're teaching. Yes, we're sitting down at the table. And yes, we're singing praise in the right way at the right time. But is God listening? Is it enough just to check off the list and do it right? It wasn't enough for Israel. Wasn't enough for Judah. Folks, it's not going to be enough for us today. We better understand why we are here and the reason why we are here and the purpose of us being here, because we're in communion and fellowship with Jehovah God, who gave us the Bible, the Word of God, by inspiration to teach us about sin and redemption and the birth, the death, and the burial of the sinless Son of God Himself and His resurrection and His ascension back to the heavens above. We can get it all right and still get it all wrong. We better get our priorities in the right place. And we better understand that it's not our little man-made traditions. They're traditions of God that we better respect and we better obey and we better get that right. But we better understand that we as God's people are His for a reason. These people in Israel and Judah thought this: we're God's people. We're not like those Edomites. We're not like those Ammonites. We're not like those Assyrians. We're not like Syria. We are God's chosen. Amos is saying, yes, you're God's chosen, but He's fixing to put the fish hooks on you. He's fixing to lift you out of your promised land. He's about to put you in bondage for the second time because you rebel against His word. Amos, the old prophet from Tekoa, had the responsibility of talking about this and prophesying about this to the house of Israel. It is a message that still rings to the hearts and the needs of people today, because many times we in the church that Jesus shed His blood and died for have the attitude, there is us and none like us. God surely would not punish us. God surely would not hold this little pet sin against me because I worship on the first day like I'm supposed to. You better get your heart right with God. If you're in the audience, you need to respond to Heaven's invitation. Is there a better time than now to get those things right? We're going to talk about tonight Amos pouring about this new kingdom, and we're going to talk about that. How great it is for us to be members and benefit. If you need the prayers of the congregation in any way, you need to be born again, and I do so as they do.